From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of May 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. USDA's crop progress report was delayed today because of the holiday. We'll bring the statisticians to you tomorrow. Today, we'll hear a commentary from Amy Rochkus in the Illinois Farm Bureau and all about the J.H. Hawes Elevator Grain Museum in Atlanta, Illinois. Oh, and Don Day will be here, too. He'll close out our program with an agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and, of course, the globe right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day lower, led down by the wheat pit. July contract 37.5 cents lower. Settlement price there at $7.82 and a quarter. For comparison's sake, the hard red spring wheat at $10.25 finished 31.25 lower, and the hard red winter in Kansas City at $9.08 down 35 cents. Back in Chicago, July corn today down 11, $7.47.5 the settlement price. September futures at $7.17.5. Down 10.75, and December at $6.73, 11 cents lower. March corn, $6.83.5, down 11.5. The May at $6.90, down 11.75. And July of next year at $6.97.25, down 10.25. July soybean futures today, $13.76 a bushel, down 3.75. August, 3.75 lower at $13.72. September soybeans, $13.67.25, down 4.75. And the new crop November soybeans, $13.63.5, a nickel lower for the day. January beans, $13.73, down 4.5. The March at $13.73 as well. They finished down 5 cents. July bean meal futures at $3.55.30, 30 cents lower. July soybean oil at $58.49. down 12 cents on the afternoon. Mercantile Exchange settled the June live cattle futures at $103.75, 35 cents lower, but the August were up 32.5 at $105.37.5 for the live cattle. August feeder cattle at $124.37.5 in the lead option, up $1.65 on the day. September at $125.97.5, $1.72.5 higher. And June lean hogs at $90.17.5 finished $1.25 higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil futures at $102.61, up $2.02 a barrel. Ethanol at $2.64 and 2/10 of a cent, down a penny and 8 tenths of a cent. And the natural gas at $4.64 and 3 tenths of a cent, up 12.5 cents today. June heating oil or diesel fuel, $3.05 and 6 tenths of a cent, up 6.5 cents. And the gold futures on the afternoon down 40 cents at $1,500.35 and 90. That's down 40 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,513, just about 72 points higher. The dollar at 74.6, down 0.32. The CRB at 350.06, that's 3.79 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. In the Urbana-Champaign area, they're saying scattered showers and thunderstorms will prevail. Partly sunny skies at the end of the day, high near 91 degrees. Breezy with southwest winds at 21 miles an hour. They'll gust to 31 for the afternoon. Chance of precip is set at 40%. Tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms will continue. That before 1 a.m. Then partly cloudy, a low 62. West-northwest winds at 6 to 16. Chance of precip this evening, 30%. Wednesday night, mostly sunny, a high of 86. That's Wednesday day, that is. Northwest winds at about 7 miles an hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 61. Thursday, a 30% chance of showers returns. Partly sunny skies in most places, though. A high near 86 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 69. Friday should be sunny with a high of 90. Friday night, clear, a low of 71. Saturday, sunny, and a high of 91 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly clear, a low of 67. By the time we get to Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny and a high of 86 degrees. More on the agricultural weather at the bottom of the hour when we talk with Don Day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at what happened in Chicago at the CME Group is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Kind of an ugly day in Chicago. What started the downward movement?
Well, of course, this all started over the weekend when the Russians made their announcement they were going to get back in the export business in wheat a little sooner than what some had believed might happen and start here on July 1st. And that, of course, set the tone for the opening last night. We bounced back as we traded on through the evening, and then today it just got a little uglier when they broke through the 50-day moving average on the wheat. That, of course, then pulled the corn a little bit lower and eventually the beans a little bit lower. We saw the funds actually sell somewhere around 6,000 contracts of wheat net on the day, but the more actively traded corn, they sold about 8,000.
Well, is there enough wheat coming out of Russia to have this much of an impact on the marketplace? And that short, it'll be a short time frame, I suppose, that it's filling, because the export market was expected to open up. I suppose maybe they're in, what, a month earlier than thought?
I think they're in 1 to 2 months sooner than expected, and with no terms that they thought that they might have to be with the Russian government would take some of the extra money, because there's about a dollar extra for the exporters to maybe pick up here, but that's going to get straightened out in just a few days. I think that today was just the fact that the announcement was actually made, that it's actually going to happen, and it is coming in to limit the U.S. exports of wheat over that time period, because they are way under our price in the market.
Okay, and then there are other things happening in the wheat market. Is the wheat in the rest of the world under any dire straits? Here in the United States, it's not in particularly good shape.
We keep talking about drought here, droughty conditions there, not such good wheat crops here. We just saw the European 27 cut their wheat production numbers, is what their expectations were. So, you know, we've got a lot of problems as far as the good crops around the world and having some weather problems, Todd. So I think, you know, this, it was vicious today, but we actually come back on the last 15 minutes about 6 cents in the wheat. So not as bad a day as it could have been, and a little bit impressive that we saw a little bit of buying off the in the last 15 minutes to some people taking profit on some of their shorts.
In the corn and the soybean pit, they just following wheat down?
I think that was a little bit there. We're also looking for the crop progress, or the planting progress, to come out about 89% on the corn this afternoon. We figured there was some progress made, and this week does look like we should see a little more progress being made planting as far as southern Indiana, southern Illinois, and Ohio are concerned. Definitely not a lot of planters moving in some of those areas today, but the hopes for them to start rolling tomorrow is quite big.
If we get to the 89%, which isn't too terribly far off the, I think, the five-year rolling average maybe, which is 92%, will the trade see that as a bearish moment?
You know, it could easily. I mean, just as we're going ahead and moving and getting in the ground, we noticed a real difference in how our corn looked from just Friday until yesterday. And basically, looking across fields that you couldn't row anything by Sunday and Monday, we were looking at 3-inch corn that looked in near perfect stands, and beans popping out of the ground after only being in the ground, you know, 3-4 days. And it's the kind of weather that can really pop things, as long as we don't turn to a total hot and dry scenario and have a change of patterns.
Yeah, a little heat can make the thing pop fast, can't it?
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. You can hear him again if you'd like at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
it was more than 100 years ago, in fact, in 1904, that a grain elevator was built in the town of Atlanta, Illinois. That elevator was closed in the mid-1970s, and back in the early 90s, a few of the town's folks there decided to save the aging building. It's now on the Registry of Historical Places in the United States. In a moment, we'll take a tour of the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator and Museum with Marge and James Coleman.
I'm Paul A. Adams from Atlanta, Illinois. In about 1869, this east-west alignment of a railroad that extended from Terre Haute to Peoria was under construction, and the railroad promoters pointed out that why should these farmers around Atlanta be shipping their grain to Chicago and then transporting it back down to Peoria, Illinois, to be processed at the mills and so forth. Well, this building is a little bit unique in that it in the early 1900s was a transition of trying to handle grains more in a bulk medium instead of sacking it up in sacks and moving it around or handling it so much. This was a mechanization of the handling of grain. Farmers normally stored their ear corn along in January and February of the year when the corn had dried out some in the cribs. It was possible to shell the corn and deliver it to central elevators such as this for transshipment to Decatur, Chicago, Peoria, and places like that. I think that one of the things that we don't quite remember clearly is that not many people stored grain in elevators at that time like we do now, because the corn, in order to keep when it was harvested in the ear, was probably 20 to 22% moisture, and the only way we had to dry it out was to put it in ear corn cribs, and the air flowing through the ear corn cribs dried the grain down sufficiently to get down, say, to 15-16% moisture level, and at that level it was possible to bring grain in and hold it a little bit in storage. But primarily these elevators were a transfer point from the farm to the processor, which meant we brought it into an elevator, loaded it in a boxcar, and moved it on. This building was appeared to be in rather sad shape, but the only parts of a sad shape, in my opinion, was the siding was well weathered, and some of it was off, and the roof wasn't quite in good shape. But structurally inside, this is built to stand and stand. If you're going to pull it over, it probably just pull over in one big piece.
Dean May was really interested, one of the first ones that really wanted to save this elevator. The town was going to burn it down for a fire project, training project, and a group of us got together and we decided to form an organization, and we did, and it's Atlanta Preservation Council, Atlanta Historical Preservation Council. We did save the elevator. The city gave us the elevator because it had come to them. And eventually we were able to get a grant, and it was a matching grant. And we went out, solicited the people, and they helped us. We got very little money from big organizations or anything. We got very, very little. We really appreciate what the people did, because I said that we couldn't start out other places if we couldn't get the people behind us. And they have been behind us. And then we we're able to get it on the National Historic Preservation, and we're very proud of that. And that didn't take very long. Our first checks were written in 1991, and by 1999, we had rededicated this elevator. The engine came from the Eminence Grain and Coal Company, which is about 3.5-4 miles out of town. And it was restored by Dean May. And he put it back in really wonderful condition. And that's how it got here. Volunteer work has gone in. The bricks in the engine building were all cleaned by volunteers in the cold old days. And we've had a lot of people volunteer their help on laying bricks and carrying mortar and fixing windows, and we have tried to keep it as historically as possible.
Well, I guess we might say it's just we enjoy showing people how it used to be done. I can't say primitive way, but somewhere between primitive and modern day, it was done through houses like this. Well, they stopped on the scale platform with the load originally, and then after they weighed and cleared the scale house, they'd drive on up in here and stop on the dump logs, and they'd trip it and run the load down in the pit. And into the leg, up in the bend.
The scales came from out in the country. And I was just riding my bike in the morning downtown, and there were four people walking around, and I had a feeling they had been from here, and I stopped and visited with them. To make a long story short, we came over in the afternoon, and the scales in the scale house was from a farm out in the country, and they didn't know their dad very well because their parents had divorced. And when they looked down in the scales, there was their dad's name with grain that he had brought to that farmer, and he kept all the list of grain and the weights. And I soon saw tears in their eyes. City Hall and the library, when they're open, you can always get someone there to call one of us who have a key to open it and show you around. It's always open during June, July, and August on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3. But if anybody comes through, most people in town know who to call and get the elevator open. And I ride my bike around a lot, and I've gone home and gotten the key many a time, brought people down here, and I've had a wonderful time showing the elevator.
Here are a few facts and figures about the machinery in the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator Museum. That old gas engine that operates the elevator, well, it runs at 400 RPM and puts out just 10 horsepower. The pulley system inside the building, well, it's driven by a single rope. It's 280 feet long. And the total capacity of the elevator is 29,000 bushels. Now up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says there's good news for free trade.
Recently announced improvements in three outstanding free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and Korea indicate that it is only a matter of time until these agreements are sent to Congress for approval. This is terrific news and something that every American should celebrate. Trade agreements are a complicated issue and can be difficult to understand. Moreover, it is easy to highlight political sensitivities rather than point out real benefits for all Americans, particularly in today's contentious political environment. The free trade agreements that are soon to be sent to Capitol Hill are win-win scenarios for all parties involved. The United States will gain expanded access to three markets, Panama, Colombia, and Korea markets, which the United States has been losing ground over the past 5 years. In turn, those nations get lower prices on better quality goods. The recent deal with Colombia will protect union workers there from violence and improve their ability to organize. Agriculture will benefit tremendously from these agreements. Over the past 4 years, farmers in the United States have lost out on $1 billion in sales as competitor nations have signed trade agreements and begun exporting commodities to Colombia and Panama. Korea is even a bigger market for American farmers, with an expected gain of nearly $2 billion a year in agricultural exports as Korea removes barriers to our farm products. Agriculture is Illinois' largest industry. Not only will Illinois farmers have better access to grain, livestock, and other foods markets, but each agriculture export dollar creates another $1.47 billion in supporting activities such as processing, packaging, shipping, and financing of agricultural products. Further, the agriculture food chain generates about 16% of the United States' gross domestic product and employs 17% of the American workforce. There is the misconception that increasing trade shifts jobs overseas. Nothing could be further from the truth. Each $1 billion in foreign trade supports 9,000 jobs here at home. The three free trade agreements together have the potential to support some 27,000 American jobs, many of which would be in Illinois. It is time for American farmers and workers to stand up and demand that our leaders put trade agreements back in their proper perspective as the economic growth opportunities for Americans that they are, and pass these three free trade agreements as soon as possible. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, you can call me at 217-333-9697. Again, that phone number, 217-333-9697.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. There we do post all of our agricultural programming in their entirety, just about 15 to 30 minutes after they air on our radio station, sometimes before. That's the case with our Commodity Week program, the weekly look at what happened at the world of marketplace. Commodity Week is our flagship program, posted about 6 o'clock at willag.org. Everything else there, not long after it airs on the radio stations. Again, it's at willag.org. Starts with the pre-opening market report, runs through the closing market report, and we have Sue Martin at 12:55, too. It's all free and available to you, our listeners. Hey, by the way, thank you so much for listening. Dave Dickey and I really do appreciate it. In just a couple of minutes, we'll be back, and we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the agricultural weather forecast in the Midwest, the nation, and around the planet. All right here on the Closing Market Report for a Tuesday afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Macaroon Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1744, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations were a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines. In 1790, the first U.S. copyright law was signed by George Washington. In 1872, C.G. Abbott was born. An American astrophysicist, he was the first scientist who suspected that the radiation of the sun varied over time. His studies on solar radiation led him to eventually discover a connection between solar variations and weather on Earth, allowing general weather patterns to be predicted up to 50 years ahead. And in 1884, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg applied for a patent for flake cereal. He was trying to improve the vegetarian diet of his hospital patients by searching for a digestible bread substitute by the process of boiling wheat. Kellogg accidentally left a pot of boiled wheat to stand, and it became tempered. When it was put through a rolling process, each grain of wheat emerged as a large, thin flake. And when the flakes were baked, they became crisp and light, creating an easy-to-prepare breakfast when milk was added. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, is on the phone line to tell us about a beautiful but hot week. Is that right, Don?
Yeah. It's a weather pattern, though, that I think we've been sort of waiting for to get things dried out a little bit. We got to do that to dry out. We got to get a little bit warmer, a little bit more sunny, and that's what's going to be happening. It's not a completely dry forecast over the next week to 10 days. We could especially next week see a bit more in the way of shower and thunderstorm activity, but it looks like we can finally say with some degree of confidence that we're finally getting into a pattern that's more stable and certainly more summer-like now that looks to be holding.
Okay, so tell me about it. There will be pop-up showers, I suppose, because there's an awful lot of humidity in the soil profile.
Well, that's exactly right. And there's still going to be some systems coming in across the northern plain states that will be the impetus to set off some shower and thunderstorm activity. But the bigger, slower-moving, larger storm systems that we saw for most of the month of May, well, those aren't going to be as potent now, tracking a little bit more north into Canada. And it's just the time of year we're expecting that they're going to come through with less frequency before they get into here to the Midwest. They have a real good opportunity of petering out.
Indiana and Ohio will be all good for the week?
Well, I think so. Now, there's going to be a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity, as you said, the pop-up variety. I would say Illinois, Ohio, sections of northwest Indiana, and Iowa are going to be in best shape to pick up the best moisture, especially the Iowa area.
Southern Plains into Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma, those areas have been dry in some places. What do they see for the week?
Well, they've got some thunderstorm activity coming their way, and this is something that we tend to see. The month of June, you can see an increase in that activity in New Mexico, West Texas, and that moisture will creep up into West Kansas and West Oklahoma. So those areas actually have some fairly good chances of picking up some precipitation. Now, central and southern Texas, southeast Texas look to remain dry, but the western areas of Kansas, Oklahoma, even West Texas are going to have some thunderstorm activity and some precipitation.
Have you been keeping track of the wheat crop around the globe? There are other dry spots, too, of concern.
Yeah, as we let's go over into the European theater, and we find that Eastern Europe is still looking a little bit dry, especially portions of Russia, the Ukraine. Western Europe in a much better position to be getting some precipitation. So wheat areas in Western Europe are going to fare better, Germany, France, those areas, and Western areas of the Ukraine. But many areas of Russia, still in some dry pockets, so that trend is going to continue.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. That wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.